Ladies and gentlemen, salam sejahtera, good day, and welcome to the CIMB Group Holdings first half 2021 financial results analyst briefing conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to CIMB Group CEO, Dato' Abdul Rahman Ahmad, and CIMB Group CFO, Mr. Khairul Rifa'i. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Firstly, let me thank everyone for joining us on this Merdeka Eve. I really appreciate you guys making time, especially tomorrow is a public holiday. Thank you for that. Let me start very quickly. I'll just give a quick key highlights, and I'll pass it to Khairul to run through with you the deck. We just announced our first half 2021 results. Mainly, effectively, the summary is that on the top line growth on the first half was sustained. However, there is a slowdown in the second quarter of 2021 due to the NOI tapering after a very strong first quarter from wealth management as well as from trading gain. Loan growth remains muted. This is predominantly because of two things. One, of course, the impact of the COVID environment, the resurgence of COVID. More importantly, as we reshape our loan portfolio. There are areas where we have identified under Forward 23+, whereby we wanted to fix, and while we're doing so, we are descaling effectively the business, particularly on the commercial side in Indonesia, as well as in Singapore, as well as we are fully exiting the Thai commercial portfolio. However, NIM improves, and Khairul will highlight that it's predominantly the main driver behind our NII effectively growth. Third, effectively, we're very pleased to report that our strong cost controls continue. OpEx only grew 1.2% year-on-year, and actually declined quarter-on-quarter by 3.8%. Our cost-to-income ratio improved to the lowest recorded by the group at 47.5% for the first half of 2021. Total provision declined from the absence of large Singapore impairment that we took in the first half of last year. However, remain elevated as we continue to take overlays. Credit costs stood at 74 basis points compared to 132 basis points in first half 2020. While loans and deposits remain flat, we continue to grow CASA at about 8.7%, and our CASA ratio was at 41.6% as at end of June. This means that our ROE ended at 8.8% for the second quarter for 2021. Our underlying ROE year-to-date remains strong at 9.1%, driven by all business segment and countries, except for Thailand, which are effectively, as I said, adjusting to the new portfolio strategy that we are taking, as well as the impact of the COVID, because Thai economy has been particularly affected by it. We have now commenced, I think we promised all of you that we're going to do what we call capital optimization through the write-off of what we call intangible asset. The second quarter, we started this process by taking about 258 million ringgit of write-off and accelerated amortization of intangible asset, and this offset the 1.1 billion gain from the deconsolidation of Touch 'n Go D in the first quarter. All figures that we are quoting in this discussion, unless we highlight it, is what we deem to be core, which is exclude this exceptional item of the Touch 'n Go D, as well as this write-off and accelerated amortization of intangible asset. Our capital ratio continues to strengthen. We hit 13.4% as at the end of June, and this allows us to recommence the payment of interim dividend of about 0.1044 per share, or about 1.0454 billion ringgit, which translate to about 40% payout ratio from our core first half profit. This is aligned with our dividend payout policy of paying between 40%-60% 40 to 60% of our net profit. So with that, I'll pass it to Khairul to take us through the detail of the result. Thank you.
Thank you, Dato, and good evening, everyone. Firstly, I will give a bit more color on the key operational highlights on slide 4. As Dato mentioned, in terms of our top line, that grew strongly on a year-on-year basis at 18.3% year-on-year, and that's mainly driven by margins expanding by 24 basis points to 2.53%. NOI as well, on a year-on-year basis, grew strongly at 29.8%. However, sequentially, on a Q-on-Q basis, NOI was weaker due to the exceptionally strong first quarter this year that was driven by wealth management and trading income. So as you can see there, both consumer and wholesale banking on a Q-on-Q basis contracted by about 21%. ECL remains elevated in the second quarter at 653 million ringgit. So for the quarter, annualized at 71 basis points. For the half year, that's 74 basis points. So it remains elevated mainly because of the additional overlay that we took in the second quarter, amounting to 110 million ringgit. In terms of our cost-to-income ratio, that has improved by 8 percentage points to 47.5% at the same point compared to last year. And as what Dato mentioned, in terms of our growth of expenses, that remains relatively low at 1.2%, creating a positive jaw of 17.1%. Moving on to the highlights on PBT by segment on slide 5. On consumer banking, the strong growth year-on-year is mainly driven by lower ECL, mainly in Malaysia. On a Q-on-Q basis, PBT contracted by 9.8%, driven by the exceptionally strong first quarter performance on the NOI. Commercial banking on a year-on-year basis grew significantly, a strong recovery on PBT, driven by the significant provision that we had to take last year on the oil and gas segment. On a Q-on-Q basis, decent growth at 4.4%, driven by NII. On wholesale banking, sort of similar to commercial banking, where there is strong growth in terms of PBT year-on-year, and that's driven by two things. One is on the trading side, and secondly, last year as well, on wholesale banking, we had to take a significant provision due to the Singapore oil and gas exposure. On a Q-on-Q basis, wholesale banking improved 8.5% Q-on-Q, driven by lower ECL. On CIB, digital assets and group funding, both the growth on a year-on-year and Q-on-Q basis is driven by stronger NII. On slide 6, PBT by country, Malaysia, on a year-on-year basis, the growth is driven mainly by top line. However, we saw some weakness on a Q-on-Q basis, and this is driven by lower NOI and also higher ECL as we take on more overlays in Malaysia. In Indonesia, strong growth of 44% year-on-year on PBT. This is driven by strong top-line growth and also lower ECL. Similarly, in terms of Q-on-Q, the growth is driven by lower ECL on a Q-on-Q basis. Thailand, year-on-year, contracted by 30.3%, driven by lower NII as we took some one-off adjustment, positive adjustment last year on NII, whereas on a Q-on-Q basis, that grew significantly by 54.4%, mainly due to stronger trading income in Thailand. Singapore, both the growth in year-on-year and Q-on-Q is driven by lower provisioning. On a year-on-year basis, that's due to the two significant provision on the oil and gas segment, whereas on a Q-on-Q basis, the lower provisioning is due to the higher recoveries that was recorded in the second quarter. Moving on to the details, starting with the operating income on slide 7. Like what Dato mentioned, on sequential basis, operating income contracted by 2.7% Q-on-Q, and that's mainly driven by the contraction of NOI by 18.8%. Broadly speaking, in the first quarter, there was an exceptionally strong, about 200 million ringgit worth of wealth management and trading income in the first quarter that wasn't repeated in the second quarter. And therefore, you can see at the chart on the bottom right, both in wealth management and fee income contracting on a Q-on-Q basis. However, on the other hand, NII did expand Q-on-Q. It still remains strong in terms of the momentum at 3.4% Q-on-Q, and that's driven by margin continuing to expand on a Q-on-Q basis by 4 basis points. This is driven by Malaysia, Singapore, and also Thailand. However, Indonesia partially offsetting that where the margin contracted due to some pressure on the loan yield side. On a year-on-year basis, operating income grew nicely at 18.3%, both driven by NII and NOI. And you can see from the bottom right chart in terms of NOI, that growth is driven by both fee income and also on the trading side. And both are driven by the very strong January and February months that we had this year. And also in terms of trading, there were weak comparators last year in March in 2020. On the NII side, the growth of 14.8% is driven by the margin expansion by 24 basis points. And the margin expansion we managed to record in Malaysia, Indonesia, and also Singapore. And this is mainly driven by our liability optimization. And also you'll see later in terms of our CASA proportion expansion that we recorded year to date. Slide 7, operating expenses, cost controls continues to be, slide 8 on operating expenses. Cost controls continues to be strong, showing lower Q-on-Q trajectory, decreasing by 3.8% Q-on-Q, and this is mainly driven by personnel expenses. Last quarter, we had higher incentive payments driven by the higher wealth management fees that was recorded in the first quarter. Another factor is admin and general, that contracted by 6.8% Q-on-Q as we made some provisioning in the first quarter. On a year-on-year basis, expenses marginally grew by 1.2%, driven by personnel expenses by 1.7%, our typical increments driving that higher year-on-year personnel expenses. The bigger driver in terms of percentage is technology costs, which grew by 20.3% as we continue our investment, planned investment in terms of our technology infrastructure. As a result of the relatively modest growth of OPEX, our jaw is at 17.1%, which consequently has resulted in our cost-to-income ratio at 47.5%. And if you compare that to our full year 2020, that is resulting in a 4.7 percentage points improvement on a yearly basis. We expect in the second half cost growth to slightly pick up from where we are at, but still, as a full year on a full year basis, still at the very low single digit number. On loan, on total provisions on slide 9, this quarter, if you look at the ECL on the other lines other than loan impairment, that is has been relatively stable in the second quarter. If you look at the comparison on last year, in 2020, we were starting to build up on the provisioning for the debt instruments and also others, and this is related to the COVID-19 related sectors last year. And this is not repeated again this year. In terms of the loan impairment, that 652 million still remains relatively elevated, and I will explain in terms of the further details of that in slide 10, the subsequent slide. So that 652 million is mainly driven by the additional MEF and overlays that we took, which is 79 million for the current quarter. And this is related to Malaysia, consumer and SME. Next, in terms of the breakdown, 109 million is the COVID-19 related provisions that we made in the current quarter. This is broken down into three parts. The first is related to a corporate retail sector in Malaysia, relatively small, at 20 million ringgit. Then the second part is 40 million related to Malaysia consumer, where we managed to identify those related to TRA. And the balance is small adjustment in terms of the PD on some of the names that we've taken previously, a small number, about 30-40 million ringgit. Then the underlying at 464 million, slightly lower versus last quarter, driven by some of the recoveries. On a year-on-year basis, at 1.4 billion ringgit, and that's equivalent to 74 basis points. So if I just recap some of those numbers, a significant portion of that, 99 million, is due to the overlays, the COVID-related provisioning at 292 million. If you recall, last quarter we took about 200 million ringgit related to the leisure sector in Malaysia, a Malaysian name but with global operations. Compare that to last year. Last year we had the Thai aviation and also Malaysia consumer, which is related to COVID, back in March 2020. In the current half, we do not have any significant credit-related provisioning. Compare that to last year at 1.2 billion. The bulk of last year of that 1.2 billion is the two Singapore oil and gas names. On the underlying provisioning, that has increased to 977 million. That is driven by two things in terms of the increase. One is the consumer segment, which is mostly related to delinquency rising as we approach June in anticipation of the Pemulih program that then launched in July and August. The second part is due to an Indonesian write back that we had last year, which amounted to 100 million ringgit. I would also like to explain in terms of the 64 million ringgit one-off recurring write-back that we had last year. This is related to model enhancement, FRS9 model enhancement in Thailand. So overall, given that we have put in additional overlays during the quarter, the allowance coverage has improved slightly to 102.22%. On slide 11, further disclosure on our assets relevant to asset quality. Firstly, in terms of the exposure to COVID-19 impacted sectors, the directly impacted sectors as at June has reduced slightly by 10 basis points on the loan side to now 4.4%. And in terms of bonds, our exposure has reduced by 40 basis points to 1.8%. In terms of the other indirectly impacted sectors, which represented about 12 other sectors such as oil and gas and construction and et cetera, that has reduced by 20 basis points to 21.9% on the loan side. On the bond side, it has reduced by 70 basis points to 5.8%. On the moratorium and R&R proportion of our book that is under those moratorium and R&R asset at July, I'll go through Malaysia first. That has increased to 27% from the March position of 14%. And that's mainly driven by our consumer at 27%. As at March, that's at 11%. And this is wholly driven by the Pemulih program. Similarly, on the commercial segment, within that is SME, the commercial segment has increased to 44% versus the March position of 19%. Indonesia, relatively stable, increasing slightly to 15% compared to the March position, whereas in Thailand, that has reduced by 4 percentage points to 12%, mainly driven by the consumer segment. And that's similar to Singapore, where the book that is under moratorium and R&R has reduced to 2%, but that is mainly driven by the commercial segment. So overall, for the group as at July, in terms of our book that is under moratorium and R&R, that is at now 21%. This is slightly higher than the 20% guidance that we mentioned earlier. However, we still remain very much comfortable in terms of our credit cost guidance for 2021, which is between 80 to 90 basis points, even though our R&R proportion is now at 21%. This is due to the fact that this is the book that's under R&R is mainly driven by the Pemulih program, and this is not your typical program under R&R due to the ease of application and also approval on the Pemulih program. Moving on to loans on slide 12, the momentum improved on a Q-on-Q basis at 70 basis points. However, on a year-on-year basis, growth still remains relatively weak, flattish growth contracting by 20 basis points. The Q-on-Q growth is mainly driven by consumer banking, 60 basis points growth driven by Malaysia and Singapore. Similarly, on wholesale, that has grown by 1.5% Q-on-Q. On a year-on-year basis, growth is mainly driven by consumer banking, specifically in Malaysia and Singapore, whereas commercial and wholesale banking has contracted, and that is mainly due to our strategy in terms of fixing some of the portfolio in some of the countries within those segments. On the country basis, Malaysia continued to be the driver of growth at 3.8%. Within that, consumer growing at 5.3%, and mortgages and the auto book continue to gain market share within Malaysia. Thailand, on the other hand, contracted by 9.2%, with commercial contracting by 31% year-on-year as we exit that book, whilst the rest still remains relatively weak within Thailand, is still recording a negative growth on a year-on-year basis. In Indonesia, even though we contracted by 6.7% year-on-year, within that, consumer is growing nicely at 5.3% year-on-year. That is offset by the negative growth in Koba and Komba, reflecting our business strategy there. In Singapore, the growth of 2% year-on-year is mainly driven by consumer banking growing by 13% year-on-year. Moving on to deposits on slide 13, our liability optimization continued in the second quarter, driving our NIM expansion for the quarter. So you can see total deposits growing by 2% and CASA continued to grow at 30 basis points. The contraction in consumer banking at 1% Q-on-Q is mainly driven by the FD side, whilst on CASA, on consumer CASA across Malaysia, Indonesia and Thailand continued to grow on a Q-on-Q basis by the magnitude of about 2 to 3%. Wholesale banking, there has been some shift in terms of CASA to term deposit, but continues to grow on a Q-on-Q basis. So overall, if you look at our CASA ratio, that has expanded to 41.6%. If you compare that to the December point last year, the expansion is about 3.2 percentage points. However, the contraction on a Q-on-Q basis is wholly driven by corporate banking due to some of the timing of CASA moving on to term deposits during the end of the quarter. So overall, if you look at CASA ratio by country, that has expanded across the board. On capital and liquidity, on slide 14, we have expanded our CET1 ratio to 13.4%, 50 basis points compared to last quarter. And this is driven by some of the reversals of the FVOCI losses that we recorded in the first quarter. So we recorded some gain during the quarter, and this drove our CET1 ratio expansion. And as what Dato mentioned, in terms of our dividend payout, we've announced a dividend of 10.44 cents, which is equivalent to 40% payout based on our core first half net profit. Our liquidity ratio all remains well above the regulatory limits and remains very comfortable across our entities. Moving on to performance by division, firstly, consumer banking on slide 15. You can see on a Q-on-Q basis, our consumer banking operating income contracted by 4.4%, driven by what I mentioned earlier in terms of NOI, contracting by 20.6%. But if we look at it from a year-on-year basis, our consumer banking business is still growing very strongly at 19.5% on the operating income, and that translates to a very strong year-on-year PPOP growth of 49.6% year-on-year. Gross loans, that grew at 3.2%, Malaysia and Singapore growing strongly, and that is offset by Indonesia and also mainly Thailand. Malaysia growing well at 5.3%, where Singapore growing at 13% year-on-year. On the deposit side, that 7.2% contraction year-on-year is mainly driven by our liability optimization. If you dig within that, in terms of our CASA consumer banking, that actually grew by 8.9% year-on-year. So the CASA ratio for our consumer banking business now stands at 48.7%, so about 7 percentage point improvement compared to the same point last year. Commercial banking on slide 16. On a Q-on-Q basis, if I just highlight in terms of NII, that continued to grow well at 2.1%. The strong recovery to close to now PBT for the year at 599 million ringgit is mainly due to provisioning reducing significantly. Operating income remains good in terms of growth at 5.4% year-on-year. On the loan side, the contraction at 5.8% is mainly driven by Thailand, Singapore and Indonesia. Malaysia, on the other hand, continued to grow decently at 5.2% year-on-year. Moving on to wholesale banking on slide 17, PBT recorded growth of 8.5% despite the weaker trading performance in the second quarter, where NOI contracted by 20.7%. The growth of PBT on the quarter is mainly driven by lower ECL, as last quarter we took that provision on the leisure name within Malaysia. On a year-on-year basis, a very strong recovery for wholesale banking, recording PPT of close to 1.3 billion ringgit, driven by a very strong PPOP growth of 44.9%, and also lower provisions for the first half of the year. In terms of gross loans, that remains weak at 2.3% year-on-year. That is broadly across Malaysia, Indonesia, and Thailand. On CDA and group funding, on slide 18, the strong growth of PBT is mainly due to NII growing by 63.1%, and this is mainly driven by the absence of the negative impact coming from the significant rate cut that we had last year. In terms of the key indicators that we track for CDA, if you look at Touch and Go Digital, both in terms of total registered users and also annual active users, the momentum continued to be strong in the second quarter. As at June, in terms of the TRU, that's at 16.1 million, whereas in terms of the annual active users, that now stands at 10.5 million. The growth, broadly speaking, continued in the second quarter as how it did in the first quarter. Just to highlight as well, we launched the Go Plus Money Market Fund in the second quarter, and now in terms of the number of customers that has touched 1.2 million, with the total AUM now slightly above the 100 million ringgit mark. CIMB Philippines as well, in terms of the momentum, is on a positive trajectory in the second quarter. And in terms of the number of customers for the year, it now has touched 3.9 million with deposits exceeding that 1 billion mark. Lastly, on slide 19, on Islamic banking, the strong growth in terms of PBT is mainly driven by net financing income. In terms of financing for Islamic, that continued to grow more than the conventional side at 3.9%. So continuing our expansion in terms of the Islamic share of book. I end here on the financials and pass the presentation back to Dato. Thank you.
Thank you, Karo. I promise all of you that we will give you update on the Forward 23 Plus program status. So I'll cover basically 3-4 slides on this. Slide 21, just recap back what is our Forward 23 Plus specific theme. I don't think we need to go through that. So slide 22 is where you can actually see where the portfolio shift that we are trying to actually to work on. As you know, the strategy was where areas that we are strong at, particularly on the consumer, as well as effectively on our treasury and market. We are trying to actually to increase the allocation where we are areas that we need to fix, particularly on the commercial, Indonesia, Singapore, and Thai, effectively we were going to T-scale. So I think the data on slide 22 actually shows that consumer in particular, while I would like the growth to be stronger, but given the COVID environment, I think we have to understand and we've got to be judicious. But if you look at the consumer MIS, i.e. excluding Thailand, our growth is about 5.3% year on year. We are still being careful because of the impact of COVID, particularly in Thailand and Indonesia. But in Malaysia, particularly, as you can look at the number, the loan growth effectively is still about 4%. Malaysia commercial continue to grow strongly at about 7% growth. But where effectively the loan growth number actually came down is because the significant descaling that you will see in areas that we need to actually to fix. So if you look at the Indonesia commercial, where I think most of you are aware, where a lot of our past issues have been, we actually declined year-on-year negative 14%. On the Singapore commercial side, as we exited the structured commodity financing account, we actually declined by close to 40%. And in Thailand, whereby we're exiting the commercial, we are running down the portfolio, that actual loan amount actually declined by close to 28%. So we expect this, what we call reshifting, will have an impact on our total loan growth number. Next, on the structured cost takeout, we delivered close to 5% actual absolute cost reduction in 2020. We promised the market 300 to 500 million additional cost takeout for 2021 to 2022. We are pleased to actually to report that we are already exceeding effectively the 300 million on an annualized basis
You won't see it on 2021 yet, because some of this basically the full effect you can only see in 2022. So if you look at it, the three main things that we have done is that the on the Singapore optimization, I think most of you have covered that we did some right sizing there. On the Thailand side, we exited from the commercial side, so we did a right sizing again on the Thai operation. And of course, by deconsolidating Touch and Go, we've taken out roughly close to 200 million of costs annually from the OPEX line. The one that we are doing it this year is that the amortization and the acceleration of our fixed asset depreciation will bring an estimated 60 million annual savings to us. So that will continue to actually to bring down our costs. In the coming quarters, I'd just like to give a heads up, we will start tackling the issue of our goodwill for some of our investment. So this is something that I think we are really looking and reviewing, and in all likelihood, they will probably make certain what we call provision for the goodwill amortization. At the same time, we are already, I think, undertaking what we call very stringent cost control framework. The next thing that we want to tackle effectively is really looking at our CapEx, which, as you know, is the main driver of our growth in our OPEX. So generally, I think we like to review and prioritize what are the most important CapEx. We expect technology costs to continue to grow double digit, but we want to get more value out of the money that we actually are spending. Slide 24, happy to report on our digital reliability. We haven't fully addressed all of the issue, but the progress, I think I'm very pleased. You look at the Clicks Malaysia, which I think has been a major issue for us. Our first half 2021 uptime is close to 99.2%, exceeding effectively our target. At the same time, I think on our customer centricity, our channel satisfaction continue to improve. 8 out of the 12 channels basically met target. I think we need to continue to focus. The big problem this year has been ability for us to handle complaints. On that, predominantly because I think the constraint of the number of people that can actually work at the office. So because of that, I think probably we expect some pressure on this, similar to our what we call non-digital CX indicator SLA. So in terms of digital, I think the growth on digital continues to grow. 50% of our, there's 50% increase in digital transaction. Now digital constitute close to 70% of our total transaction. So that's huge. And we expect this over the long term will give us opportunity for us to optimize further our operation. In terms of the performance management, most of you have been updated that we have completed our new KPI and bonus framework, particularly for the senior management team. I think we have executed our LTIP, which shareholders approve. Just as a bit of recall, our LTIP is broken down into two components. 50% of it is under what we call restricted shares, which is only given if we hit what we call ROE target in 23 and in 24. And the second part of it is option, and that option is issued at 10% premium to effectively to market price prevailing at the time that we actually do that, which is what effectively in June. So effectively, even with the recent increase in the share price, we are still effectively the option price is basically still below the option exercise price is still below the current market price. So that means really management have to create real additional shareholder value before we are able to benefit from this option. At the same time, I think we are continuing our human capital transformation. We have done an optimal study on organization structure, predominantly identified areas where we can actually optimize. But more importantly, effectively identify area that we need to tackle through digitization. So that is our focus currently. At the same time, I think sustainability is a big issue. I would like to invite all of you to our Investor Day that we are doing in conjunction with our Cooler Earth Summit. an annual event that we have done. This is our third year. So this year we are doing in conjunction with that an investor day. Our investor relation will contact all of you to invite that. We will unveil effectively our updated commitments under sustainability. But the one thing that will remain is our target to achieve 75 percentile under Dow Jones Sustainability Index. We have improved effectively from 51 to 65 percentile. So work still needs to be done for us to be what we consider to be a leading sustainability institution. At the same time, I think we are also continuing in terms of our CSR program. We are about to launch what we call our community kitter, whereby we provide aid amounting to about 10 million ringgit to help lives that's been affected. So that's basically in summary of the progress of our Forward 23 Plus. In summary, which is slide 27, I would like to say that our first half was solid, I would call it, driven by NII growth, as highlighted by Khairul on the improvement in NIM. However, I think we are extremely cautious about the second half. We don't expect the second half to be as strong as the first half, predominantly a couple of things. One, the delay or the prolonged lockdown caused by the resurgence of the cases. Mean the economic environment continues to be challenging, so loan growth I think will be affected. So with that, we have lowered our loan growth target from our target of effectively 4 to 5% down to 2 to 3%. While at the same time, we know that there will be an impact on the modification loss and overlays in the third quarter, given the fact of the quantum of the repayment assistance program under the Pemulih package, whereby under the consumer side, close to 27-28% of our portfolio in consumer are under R&R. So with that, we expect effectively both the hit on modification loss as well as overlays that we like to build over this portfolio, so that I think we are covered even in the worst case scenario in 2022. Last, I think we'll continue with our cost management drive to make sure that our structural our expenses are structurally lower while we continue to invest in technology. So at the same time, I think some of you already asked, our first quarter, as you know, our ROE is above 9%, and I think even though the second quarter is about 8.8%, it's probably quite obvious that our original target of 6.7% we are able to meet, so we are raising that to 7 to 8% as our guidance. So that effectively is the updated guidance that we are happy to actually to share. I think that covers all that we wanted to address. Happy to take any question that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Dato. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing *1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press *1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to assemble a queue. Once again, a gentle reminder, please press *1 to ask a question. We'll take our first question from Robert Kong from Citi. Your line is open. Please state your question.
Hi, Robert from Citi. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I think I'll touch on three things. So first of all, could you update your NIM guidance? Obviously, all the banks so far have had very good first half NIMs, but they're guiding lower for the full year, and the usual reasons are some impact, some basis points estimate for modification loss, maybe some tightening of liquidity or the trend later in the year. So perhaps you could give some updated guidance on your NIM first. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we'll be the same as the other banks. So I'll pass to Khairul to be specific on that. So no difference on our side. We expect NIM for the second half to taper down.
But I'll pass to Carol on the specific details.
Yep. So I think we are maintaining our guidance for on a full year basis. We're looking at NIM to expand between 10 to 20 basis points. Where we ended last year was at 2.32. Where we ended first half was 2.53. So we do expect, like what Dato mentioned, the second half to be a contracting NIM versus the first half. And this is driven by two things, and mostly within Malaysia. So number one, because of the fact that you mentioned the same reason, because of the modification loss. So we do expect that to hit in the third quarter, driven by that 27% proportion of our book under the Pemulih program. So we will take some hit on the modification loss. That's number one. Number two, most of the benefit of the liability optimization is mostly over. We did that in the first quarter, and we did continue to benefit from that in the second quarter. Liquidity remains flushed within the system, but we have seen some promotions coming up from our competitors. We are looking to be able to maintain the current rates, but there could be some pressure on the cost of deposit side simply because of the fact that most of the benefit is mostly happened in the first half of the year. So there could be some pressure on the cost of deposit side within Malaysia. The rest of the other countries, similarly, somewhat in Singapore as well, deposit in terms of repricing has tapered off. So that could potentially creep up in Singapore. So mostly in Malaysia and Singapore. In Thailand and Niaga, we expect that to be relatively stable. If you recall, in terms of in Niaga, for the first half, we are at 5.08. We guided the market at 4.9 to 5.10 for the full year. So for the second half for Niaga, we do expect that to remain relatively at those levels as of the first half. So the contraction in margin, just to summarize, is mainly driven by Malaysia and also Singapore in the second half. But overall, net-net, for the full year, we still expect between 10 to 20 basis point margin expansion.
Thank you. The second question of the three is, again, just looking at your credit costs. Again, conservatively, I know you've kept it where it is, but your second quarter credit costs, even with the pickup in the loans under moratorium, you know, it's come in a bit lower than, you know, we would have thought, even with the overlay. So are you being conservative? Should we use the second quarter, the 650 odd million, as a number? Because if that is the number, then you're coming below the guidance. I'm just trying to see how you're thinking about it.
Yeah, for the time being, I think we are keeping the guidance at 80 to 90 bps. Obviously, first half came lower than that. But I think, given the fact that I think we are still processing the Pemulih assistance program. So at the moment, as Carol mentioned, we are 27% portfolio. We do think that probably it will not increase much more, but it will probably be, you know, probably up to 30%. So the big question is how much overlay you need. And I think this is where we will err on the conservative side, because 30% is close to 50 billion ringgit. So it's a lot. So it's not small number. So the question obviously all of us, not just us, right, all banks will be asking, what truly are the amount that really what we call stress? So obviously that's the big question, because if you look at it, we were nicely migrating out. If you recall, under the blanket moratorium, 85% of the retail portfolio benefited. It then went down to 15% under our TRA, and it went in Malaysia, then it actually went down as low as 6%. So 85, 15, 6. So you could argue probably the one under stress is about 6%, maybe slightly higher. Because obviously we make Pemulih assistance as simplified as possible, effectively straight through. The view is that a lot of people who may not be under stress apply because they wanted to have what we call liquidity relief, whether to invest in wealth or do other stuff. But the question is, you do not know, right? Until they commence repayment, you don't have a true sense on whether they are really under stress or otherwise. So with that, I think we're going to do simulations, but generally, I think why we are keeping the guidance to be the same amount, which means second half we expect it to be higher, right? Otherwise, the average will not be 80 to 90. We're predominantly trying to
figure out or estimate what will be the one under stress when they are out of formulae. All of us are facing this issue because they will be out under formulae only in 2022. So because a 6 months moratorium and 90% of those people who applied for moratorium chose the moratorium. They didn't choose the 50% repayment part. So because of that, I think we are conscious that we don't want a cliff effect in 2022 and not have enough basically provision there. So as I say, we ended up to maintain our guidance, which means that the second half of the year, the provision will be higher than the first half of the year. But I think we'll have a better data or information with you once we close our book on the third quarter.
So just to clarify on this point, I know you're still doing your simulations, but do you have any color as to, you know, the 27%, how much is low risk, medium risk, high risk, or maybe income brackets that could help us to understand the risk?
We do have big data, I'll pass it to Cairo to do, but surprisingly the high risk, the B40 high risk, you'll consider, we'll call it B40, M40, top T20, and consider that high risk. Quite a lot of the B40, effectively, but though it's considered high risk, didn't apply. That's predominantly because some of them, if they are government officers, they continue to actually to receive income. The bigger issue, I think, what we need to do is the one that said what I call enjoyed multiple restructuring. They were in formulae, they were in the blanket, or the TRA, they applied, and then they basically continue to apply or enjoy the benefit under the formulae. So that part of it, even though they may not be considered, I call it high risk, exhibit what I call high risk characteristics. So that is the difficulty in terms of trying to extrapolate which is the real one under what we call the really risky. But I'll pass to Cairo to maybe elaborate further on
that. Yeah, I think maybe I can give three data points, right? Number one is what I'll just reiterate what Datuk mentioned earlier. So of that total R&R moratorium, 90% is under moratorium, or what you can term as well deferred installment. So only 10% is under the assistance of the installment. Then secondly, if we break down that 50 billion ringgit that Datuk mentioned in terms of the segments, under B40 of that 50 billion is about 25%. Under M40 is about 20% of the entire 50 billion. So the remainder is outside those two. Another data point, the third data point, is in terms of the proportion of B40 that actually applied for the Pemulih program. And that is about 30% of the B40 segment. So we have in our books about 20%, which is classified as B40, and that is broadly the industry average. All that within that B40 segment, 30% applied for the Pemulih program. Then if you look at the M40 segment, the proportion which applied for Pemulih is about 25%, i.e. not just M40, sorry, let me stand corrected, outside the B40, 25% applied for Pemulih. So slightly lower proportion than B40, but not so wide versus the B40 segment.
So but the interesting thing about Malaysia, and this is where I think I know the politicians in Malaysia are calling for more and more blanket moratorium. The one that actually applied, I mean, substantially part of it is non B40, to tell you the truth. So the question is whether the T20 that actually applied are really under stress, or they are effectively choosing the alleviation of effectively of the cash flow to better use their liquidity. So, but you would argue that they are probably not under stress unless they lost their business, etc., and all that.
Okay. Thank you. The final question I have is just to explain the exceptional items. So you're saying that there's 258 million is the exceptional item, and net of tax it's 196, right? That's on slide 29. So the questions are, number one, actually your isn't it your reported profit is 1084 and your BAU is 1280? So I'm just being pedantic on slide 29. Isn't it the other way around? You're actually reporting 1084, and your BAU is actually 1280. Anyway, this is a pedantic point. The question I wanted to ask is, how much more of this intangibles write-off do you see yourself doing for the rest of this year? Because obviously you've got that one big gain in the first quarter, which you can obviously utilize and not affect your bottom line too much. I just want to understand how much more there is to do, because we should be presumably looking at your 1280 for your second quarter as your underlying profit, not the 1084. Is that correct? Slide 29.
Not quite. But I'll pass to Cairo effectively on to go through that. But in terms of your second question, which is how much more, I think we're very open that effectively we intend to write off between 2.5 to 3 billion ringgit effectively, or what we call intangible asset. And intangible asset, of course, includes effectively the so-called write-off that we have done. As you know, the bulk of the, we have roughly about 9 over billion in terms of intangible asset, which causes effectively a difference of about 200 bits between ROTCE and effectively ROE. And this intangible asset, while the one that we have been doing is relatively small, the bigger one are effectively goodwill from the acquisition that we have done in the past, predominantly in Malaysia, where we did the Southern Bank, second effectively in Thailand, as well as effectively Indonesia. So if you ask us how much, let's say over a 2-year period, it's 3 billion, we expect to do effectively 1.5 billion probably in 20 balance in 2021, and effectively another 1.5 billion probably in 2022.
Just to explain this table, yes, Robert, sorry about that. It is the other way around in terms of BAU and reported. But I think just to give a bit more color on the intangible asset and accelerated amortization. So there's the other part of the IA, right, which is the intangible asset. So we have in our books intangible assets worth about 1.8 billion ringgit of intangible assets. Of course, we have goodwill, which Dato already explained. But in terms of the intangible assets, when we reviewed it, we break it up into two portions. One is the part where we are able to write off immediately, and that amounts to about 110 million ringgit. Then the balance is on an accelerated depreciation basis, right? So in total, those two components is addressing about 500 million ringgit of the 1.8 billion ringgit of intangible assets. So within the accelerated amortization, you will see that. So for the second quarter, that the exceptional item is amounting to 130 million ringgit. In the coming quarters until the end of 2022, you will see about 50 million ringgit every quarter until we write off or we zeroize the net book value of that accelerated amortization of the intangible assets.
Sorry, just to be clear, on the actual financial statements, where is this number showing up, this 258 million? So I'm looking at page 2 of your financial statements. I can't work out where that 258 sits and where the tax.
Yeah, I think, it's mainly in OPEX, but I think for the benefit of the rest, I'll let Julie explain to you in detail after the call. But 230 million of that is within the OPEX line. 11 million of that is under the other provision line.
Okay.
But I'll let
you.
Julie walk. Yeah.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Danny Goh from Credit Suisse. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for the call. Actually, I just have follow-up questions on what Robert asked. I was just wondering whether you can give us a bit more color on the modification loss that you're expecting. What's the expected amount from that? And just following up on the restructured loans, would you be able to give us an idea of what proportion of the applicants under Pemulih are first-time applicants who have never asked for any assistance before in the past, and what proportion of those who have asked were actually servicing their debts consistently up to that point?
Okay, on the modification loss, I think we will put that number in terms of booking in the third quarter. But in terms of the quantum, now two things. Number one is that it will be significantly lower than last year because of two reasons. One is because of the proportion. It's only 27% versus last year, which is 85%. But number two, we are able to charge interest on the principal amount. So the modification loss will be significantly lower than last year. So if you recall last year, on day one, that hit was close to about 300 million ringgit. This time around, it will broadly be about a third of that number. We're still finalizing that number as we go through account by account, but broadly speaking, it'll be about a third of that number. In terms of that loans, in terms of the restructured loans who are the first timers and those are under multiple, I don't have that number off hand, unfortunately. So we'll get back to you on that, Danny.
Okay. And just on the modification loss, is there also an offsetting effect from the reversal from last year?
Yes. So in the first half, we did have some of that unwinding coming through. And that's not just Malaysia, mainly driven by Malaysia, but also some of the other countries as well. Ballpark figure on the unwind is close to about 60 million ringgit for the first half of the unwind. So that will continue in the second half and slightly less so into 2022. But similarly, in terms of this modification loss on the Pumule itself, obviously on day one, you'll get that bigger hit. And then as the quarters come through, you will get some of that unwind coming through from that day one hit from this permulate modification loss.
Okay, and just to clarify, even with the impact from the modification loss, you are still likely to fall within that plus 10 to 20 basis point guidance on NIM?
Yes, correct.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
We will take our next question from Harsh Modi from JP Morgan. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the call. I had a simple one. There is significant shift in tone of guidance across banks. You are starting to talk about some potential competition on FD, lower NIM, primarily led by higher cost of fund. A couple of other banks have said they are starting to they are okay to lock in FD rates, but at the same time, you're lowering your guidance on loan growth, and I don't sense anybody is really going out to grab loan growth. So, and global scenario, we are talking about tapering starting, let's say, end of the year. So financial conditions are not really tightening. So the question here is, why do you think will you, let's say, or your competitors are looking to lock in higher FD rates? Why is there a need for a promo? Any thoughts around that would be great. Thanks.
I think there are two parts of it. I think you have to be cognizant that it is not, and again, effectively, I mean, COVID affects different banks different way, right? And again, I think you are creating effectively what I call dual. Whereby banks that I think have benefited less from the liquidity, I think they want to actually to either maintain or effectively increase their liquidity. So that's where I think the pressure is coming from. It's not pressure coming from the large bank that have a dominant position for that. So we saw it effectively much more what we call protecting the franchise. We do believe that liquidity is flush. But on our consumer side, what we are seeing effectively from our RMs and branch manager is that, look, there are banks that are offering, and if we don't do that, then some of our customers will move away, much more difficult to attract them later, effectively in the future. So my sense, effectively, is more effectively of certain banks, because of their own requirements, are starting to actually to increase effectively their rate, whether that's for to meet their loan purpose or they basically need to actually achieve a liquidity objective. I think that's a separate issue. But I believe it's much more driven by the smaller banks rather than the large bank. And I think we are making a judgment call to protect our franchise that we do not want to lose much more. If you look at our deposit number, probably we are one of the lowest amongst the largest banks in terms of deposit growth, because I think we've been quite aggressive in terms of optimizing our cost of deposit. Carol, you want to add?
Yeah, so I think in terms of protecting that franchise, we are going to look at selectively compete and retain or defend some of that deposits. So like what Datuk mentioned, you know, the system remains very flushed with liquidity. Growth overall remains fairly moderate or muted. So there is no real push to really price up deposit on a big or wide scale basis. So it's really on a targeted basis where we want to defend our customer franchise.
Right, I get that, but there is a price to it. If you're not going to use that liquidity, there is a 6 month, potentially 12 month loss of your NII. So effectively what you're saying is that the benefits of paying that 20, 30, 40, 50 or even higher basis points is right now is more than saying that we will deal with it 12 months later. And I'm just unable to understand exactly, is it optimism? As in, to me, as in, the way I think about it is a very bullish signal that even large banks like you are basically saying we are willing to compete on a selected basis, because we think 6 months from now, our cost of funds will move up because everybody will start lending. Is that what it is, or is it like just as you said, Dada said, that is just for protecting the franchise, and that is it?
It's definitely the latter, Harsh. It's really protecting certain targeted segment or within that consumer segment. And just to put it into context, we're not talking about 40 to 50 basis points, right, for those targeted customers. We're looking at between 5 to 10 basis points for those targeted customers.
Oh, okay.
And where the proposition really stands, that with these targeted customers, and it's particularly in the preferred segment, there is a significant cross-sell into other areas as well, like wealth management fees and whatnot. So if you lose these customers, you are also losing some of the NOI potential. So that's where justification on pricing on those targeted segments. So just to be very clear, we're not looking to compete for deposits. Like what you said, the system liquidity is very flush. So we just want to protect some of these high potential clients to be still within our CIMB franchise.
Got it. Okay. Thanks a lot for that.
We'll take our next question from Akash Rawat at UBS. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, great. Thank you very much for taking the questions. So I only have two quick questions. The first one is the comments that you made in the model loss. So you said that it's roughly going to be a third of last year, which suggests that it's mainly the quantum that is driving the lower number this year. The nature of the model loss, the nature of the relief loans, which is that you can charge interest and principal, is not really making much of a difference. Is that fair? And then the second question is on the dividends. I just want to check what will be the cash and DRP component of that. And a related question is that with a 40% payout, you're actually looking, you know, much lower, or you're looking lower compared to most of your peers, who are now sort of, you know, sounding a lot more confident in raising payouts, and they're even guiding for higher payouts next year. So I'm just wondering, how should we think about the full year payout for you? Will it still be closer to the lower range of your guidance, or, you know, you have room to sort of bring it up to maybe 50-60%?
So I'll cover the dividend side, and I'll pass to Carol to address the part. I have to say, compared to our some of our competitors, our capital ratio, even though I think it's the highest ever for quite some time that we have, it is still much lower compared to our competitor, which are probably in excess of 14%, some of them effectively 15% and plus. So that means effectively, as you know, all dividends needs to go get regulatory approval. I think the lens that the regulators look at it is slightly more stringent because they do what they call stress tests. So that I have to say we are probably going to guide that our dividend payout ratio will probably be on the lower end of the 40% to 60% dividend payout policy, simply because not because anything, because our starting point of our capital ratio is lower than our larger competitors.
And Akash, in terms of that DRS portion, so it's 100% electable as DRS. In terms of that modification loss question, that the ability to charge interest on the principal portion is a big driver of the reduction in terms of the mod loss compared to last year.
Listen, I'm sure you guys are following Malaysian politics. You do not know whether the Malaysian government is going to impose or whatever. You know, I think the big topic in Malaysia at the moment is interest-free moratorium. But obviously, I think we will defend that as best as we can.
Got it. So when you say that, Carol, it's a big driver, did you mean when you said a third of last year? So if you adjust for the quantum, then it's a third of that amount. Is that what you meant?
Sorry, Akash, can you repeat that again?
So I meant just on the mod loss calculation, you said it should be a third of what you had to book last year. Did you mean that when we adjust the modification loss for the quantum, like quantum is lower this time, so when we adjust for that, then it's a third of that amount? Is that what you meant?
Yes. Yes, yes. On an absolute basis, it will be broadly about a third of last year.
Okay, I see. Okay, I'm a bit confused, but I'll probably ask you again later after the call. Thank you.
We will take our last question from Iqbal Aziz from PNB. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, Dato' and Khairul. Thank you for your presentation. Basically, I have two main questions. So, going back to the intangible asset, or specifically the one-off impairment to the intangible asset. Just would like to clarify on the expected impairment going forward. So like just now you mentioned it totals around 500 million going forward, at least for until FY22. Is that including the goodwill or is that purely on the intangible asset? And then if I can, yeah.
Sorry, if I can just address that question first. That is specifically on the intangible asset. So going forward on a quarterly basis, on the accelerated amortization of intangible asset, we should have an exceptional item of 50 million ringgit per quarter, broadly speaking. And that is specifically accelerated amortization on the intangible asset, which will run until towards the end of 2022.
All right.
So the goodwill number, the one I mentioned, the goodwill number, which is the writing down effectively the value of our so-called investment, that will basically will be a separate number to this intangible asset write-off. So just to be quite clear, there are two components, right? One is an intangible asset write-off. The second one is goodwill. Both are technically intangibles, but one relates to what we call the system and fixed asset write-off. The other one is based on the cost of investment that we are carrying, basically the cost of the acquisition that we did for both Southern Bank, Thailand, as well as Indonesia.
All right, thank you.
And that figure, essentially, around 3 billion ringgit over two year period.
Noted, Dato. Just would like to get my thinking around the savings of 60 million. How can I understand the impairment? How does it translate to the cost saving going forward? Can you give some color on that?
Yeah, so once you write down your asset, effectively, then of course your depreciation amount basically will go down.
So that's what we are actually estimating. So we estimate that basically after all said and done, that this intangible asset write-off will generate 60 million effectively lower depreciation on a year-to-year basically basis.
I see.
Of course, our goodwill write-off won't have any effectively P&L or OPEX improvement because obviously it's just a write-down of the goodwill. But the intangible asset, because otherwise you are depreciating effectively a higher amount. Now with the write-down in the intangible asset write-off, then you your depreciation charge year-on-year will come down.
Okay, noted. And if I can ask one last question, with regards to your OPEX, if you look at the technology component, is around 20% year-on-year. If I can be a bit granular on that, can you specify which would be the focus area that you have focused and that lead to the 20% increase?
Yeah, so a bit of that is actually a two element. One element, the big component of the technology escalation is the CapEx cost. So we are detecting the CapEx amount of roughly $1 billion a year. So once the project is completed, you actually have to start depreciating this so-called CapEx. So the bulk of the increase comes from the increase in depreciation effectively in technology in our system. Now, if you ask where effectively $1 billion effectively the CapEx we are spending roughly, generally it's covering three main areas. One effectively in what we call remediation work. This is where you have a lot of systems that had end of life or end of system. We need to actually to upgrade them. We need to basically to invest and putting on. So that's basically one component. The other component is that we are currently building a new next-gen clinic. So most of you are aware, one of the issues in Malaysia has been our clinic reliability. So we are currently building a completely fresh, separate clinic system so that once it's completed, and we aim to probably complete it by first quarter next year, literally we will have what we call four clinics. Two basically of the current app and web, and then another two brand new, effectively, app and web for the next-gen clicks. Such that I think will be very similar to our competitor Maybank, when even effectively our new clicks go down, the old clicks will continue to actually to operate. So virtually to the customer, they literally, in a very, very unlikely situation that their services effectively disrupted. Of course, one day we'll probably decommission the whole clinic, but currently the plan effectively is to run parallel the old clinic and the new clinic. So that's basically the second part. The third part, of course, I think we have a lot of investment in terms of digitization, stabilizing our core, simplifying our core. We are looking at the new core payment system, so that basically things can be simplified and make it more stable. So three elements. One, to upgrade end of life. Two, effectively real investment for, I call it for clicks, and I think we are going to do what we call also for our transaction banking. And the third, effectively, is simplifying some of our system operation.
That's it. Thank you.
That concludes our question and answer session. I will hand over the call back to Dato. Any additional closing remarks? Please go ahead.
No, thank you very much. I think there were a couple of follow-up questions that we will address effectively after this meeting or tomorrow. So we'll cover that. Meantime, I'd like to thank all of you for your time today. And please, if you have any further questions, please don't hesitate to contact Julie and Cairo so that we can address them. With that, thank you. Happy Merdeka Day for those who are celebrating. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation, and we wish you all Malaysians a wonderful Merdeka Day.